Yeah, I didn't want the job. Nobody wanted that job. I swear to you, nobody. And I've said this before. I think I was the only person in the interview. And in the interview, I said I didn't want the job. Yeah. Like, it was a strange interview. Like, at half the interview, I'm saying I don't want the job. Then the other half of the interview, he's answering the questions. But it was, for me, it felt like we knew we had an experiment. It was just an experiment in the sense, like, what happens? Like, what if we actually gave information? We were giving prime ministers and finance ministers, like, just not political information, but just, like, boring, numbers. This is what this could cost. Wars, fighter planes, crime bills, changes to old age security. What if we put together a team of people? So we gave them everything, like documents, like thick documents, and with executive summaries and people's names on them, and they were peer reviewed. Like, how would that play out? What happens? Would they be able to hold the executive to account?
You're listening to a special episode of On the Record Off Script, the podcast. My name is Mark Coffin, and I'm one of the hosts. On this week's special episode, we'll share excerpts from a talk given by Kevin Page, the first ever and now former Parliamentary Budget Officer for Canada. Kevin Page spoke at the Springtide Better Politics Awards in March in Halifax of this year. Now, before we dive into this week's episode, we'd like to extend an invitation to you to be part of the special episodes of the Off Script podcast. We know Nova Scotia politics is about much more than just what we hear from MLA, so we're also interested in hearing your own stories. Have you worked in and around politics? Maybe you haven't, but you've engaged in politics enough to collect a story worth telling. Do you have an interesting story to tell from the war room, the campaign trail, or the doorstep? To give you a sense of the kind of stories we're looking for, we want to stay true to the spirit of the podcast. On the Record and Off Script, we want to tell the untold, unspoken, but meaningful accounts of Nova Scotian politics. Short is good, less than 5 minutes is best. We also like funny, but it doesn't need to be funny. So as long as it's something we can all learn from and walk away feeling a little more informed about how our democracy and politics works in Nova Scotia, we want to hear it. So if you've got a story in mind, you can share it a few ways. If you share it via email, someone from the Offscript team may read it on air, and you can reach us at offscript@springtidecollective.ca. That's all one word, offscript@springtidecollective.ca. Or you can share your story over the phone at the Offscript voicemail. Dial the main Springtide line, 902-989-3668, and select extension 101 and share away. You'll just get our voicemail. We can't promise that we'll be able to do something with every story we get in response, but we will read and listen to all of them. All right, here's this week's podcast. Oh, and a heads up. In his speech, Kevin makes a few references to a place just off the stage with his hands, which obviously you can't see because you're only listening. But if you were in the room, you'd know that there is an artist from the company Brave Space named Isabel Chender, who was live illustrating his speech. So when he says her or the cartoonist, that's who he's talking about. All right, here you go.
Wow, this is amazing. Thank you. So I'm humbled to be here, truly humbled, and to be part of this process where you celebrate better politics. And I'd like to talk about three things tonight. Number one, I'm here to support Springtide Collective. And I just think it's important that we celebrate, democratic politics in Canada and particularly in Nova Scotia. I love the way they do it. I want to talk about that. And I just, I want to be here with this party for all the nominees and to celebrate them in this Better Politics Award. So I came for the party. Number two, if I could, I'd like just to share some observations in that spirit of better politics about the state of play in Ottawa these days. Since October 2015, the election, but even in the context of around the election and kind of going forward. So just some personal observations about the state of politics and policies, because I think it is kind of connected to better politics. And finally, if it's okay, just share a few lessons from my own experiences. As Mark said, I was the Parliamentary Budget Officer. So what was that like? And I'm sure some of these lessons are probably sound pretty familiar to the nominees. Not that I deserve any kind of awards, I don't. But it's that same experience of trying to bring about positive change and working with our political system. So a few weeks ago, I had this moment. Like, I always have moments. And, not always, but sometimes. And, I found myself like watching TV like you folks always do. You know, I come home from work, I teach at a university, you know, marking some papers or whatever, turn on CNN, you know, listen to Wolf Blitzer, Anderson Cooper, and then, you know, all of a sudden they kick in, and then there's the CNN Republican debates, which have been hard to watch, right? But it's like, you know, for like some TV, you don't know why you watch it, but you still watch it because you can't believe it could be that bad. But they never surprise you. I remember, you know, and getting a little bit disappointed, and this is well after our 2015 election. I was worried about the country. Honestly, I'm sure a lot of you folks were. I just didn't like the politics. It wasn't partisan in the sense, like, and I've voted conservative in the past. I voted liberal. I voted NDP. I voted Green Party. And we'll see if the marijuana party once we legalize it, whether they have a political party, maybe I'll vote for them. But it was just, I didn't like the direction. And then you watch the stuff, they're playing out this type of politics playing out in the Republican debates, and I didn't like it. And it almost every next morning I wake up, I read the local paper, then I have on my iPad, I do actually have an iPad even though I write down things on notes, and I read various newspapers, and I love reading the New York Times, and there's one editorialist, David Brooks, you can always guarantee he's going to beat up on the Republicans, even though he's kind of a conservative, and he's just not happy with the state of politics. So I read his piece, and I'm reading it, and he talks about this book, In Defense of Politics, which was written by a fellow named Crick. Probably somebody already knows. I've written it down here somewhere. Bernard Crick. It was written in 1962, and he was quoting. David Brooks is a good writer. He's often on these sort of Charlie Rose shows. I love listening to him. He writes a wide array, and he starts quoting from this book about how important politics is, and how we're forgetting, these lessons, and what's at stake here, and these people that actually bring about change. And at the same time, he's telling basically the Republican Party, which I think is his party, this isn't good. And then so I went out, immediately. I got to read the book. So I get the book, and I start reading it, and it's starting to sink in. And then I find out there's another book written like a 50-year anniversary. It's really more of an essay by this fellow Matthew Flinders, who wrote this book. He wrote it called Defending Politics in 2012. So then I'm reading that book. This is all within a number of hours, and again, these are more essays than books, so they're not like these large books. And then I get an email from Sarah Simpson and Mark Coffin saying, "Hey, remember, you got to come to this event, and don't forget, like it's on such and such date." And the typical efficiency of Springtime Collective. It's here's all your here's the plane ticket, and this is where the hotel you're staying at. Here's the timelines. It's all completely well organized. So then I said, "Whoa, I got this event coming up." So I hit go on the website. And I'm looking at the website, and I'm seeing, what is like the vision and mission of this organization? And I'm, reading, making democracy better. I like that, And then, what are they about? And they're about engagement, and they're about positive change, and they're about celebrating politics that are going here. Then I'm actually going through some of these videos. Now, I've just realized as I'm coming onto the stage, this is the lady that contributed to those unbelievable creative videos, which I recommend. I think, I would, if I wasn't teaching it, in fact, I'll make sure my students look at some of them. And maybe I'll test them on some of these videos, which speak to really important things there, institutions and how this stuff is set up. Then I start to realize, everything I was reading from those books that I really liked, like that book by Crick, and in the book by Flinders on how to, in defense of politics, it's like embedded into everything I was reading on the website, both in, and so, like I said, this is something special. So if I have my first message is that, and it's really why I'm here, we need to support this organization. That this is an organization, Springtime Collective, and I'm looking at this group here, and I've already had a chance to talk with some of you. It's pretty special. You need to nurture this organization. You need to protect it. This is I think the second year of these awards. I'm hoping we're still doing these awards 10 years from now, and this continues to grow. Exactly that was said by in the opening address.
So here's a question: what do Michael Tender, Kelty Jones, and Tim Segulin all have in common? They're all people that are responsible for bringing the podcast to your ears. Each of them are kind enough to donate to the Offscript podcast each month, and they all started doing so over the last couple of weeks. they have something else in common too. Offscript is produced by Springtide, and Springtide is a charity, so at the end of the year, they'll all get a tax receipt for the total amount they donate over the course of the year. So if you want to donate, you have two choices, and you should pick whichever one works best for you. If you make a one-time donation of $25 or more before December 31st of this year, you'll get a tax receipt you can use when you file your taxes in just a few months. The more you donate, the bigger your tax credit. So if you give $50, you get $11 back at tax time. A $100 donation gets you a credit of $24 at tax time. Now, if those numbers sound steep, and we know pennies are often tight this time of year, consider signing up to be a monthly donor at a much smaller amount. You can pitch in $3, $5, $8 a month. If you stick around for the whole year, you'll get a tax receipt this time next year for the full amount you've given over the course of those 12 months. If you'd like to donate, head to offscript.ca/donate, and you can make a secure donation there. If you can't donate, consider sharing the podcast with a friend who might enjoy it. That's our last interruption for the week. Back to your podcast.
There's a few messages, a couple really big ones I'm just going to highlight. Number one is that you must celebrate. Again, this is from Crick and Flinders. We must celebrate our democratic achievements and practices, that the fruits of democratic politics are all around us. And we forget that. So even I'm walking from the Lord Nelson, you know, just a beautiful like 20-minute walk down whatever that street's name is. I'm going past hospitals, schools like, you know, St. Mary's. I'm going past beautiful architecture. I'm walking down these roads, and this is stuff that we've actually can thank politics for actually bringing to our country and bringing to Halifax. Actually, we have people here from the city of Halifax that make sure that we have this great infrastructure. But this is politics. So politics is, and this is what one of the messages from Cricks and from Flinders, it improves our lives. Like, and again, I'm thinking like, this is, again, I'm remembering now in terms of that moment, why I had to read these books, why I even need to be here, because I was feeling so down after I was watching the Republican debates. But they improve people's lives. We wouldn't have these great facilities, including this amazing university, if it wasn't for people coming together, political people making these decisions, supporting the collective, really, because this is, you know, these are collective goods, right? This is what brings us together. This is what Springtime does. And why does Springtime? It's Springtime Collective. So I think read into its DNA of this organization, to me, it sounds positive. The second message from Crick and Flinders in these books, like you talk about defense of politics or defending politics, is that politics needs revitalization. I mean, that was so clear to me when you watched the Republican debate. They need revitalization. They hopefully will use this as an opportunity to revitalize. For me, that was true with our country last fall, the fall of 2015. We needed to revitalize politics. And you know, the way to shift politics to make it more optimistic, and the way to move it away from the politics of pessimism, or you know, the politics of fear, to attack politics, corrosive cynicism, is through education. It's always education. You know, it's about St. Mary's University, but it's about what Springtime Collective does for us. It's about social dialogue, which is Springtide. It's about engagement. So this is what Springtide lives for. So again, I'm thinking like this is why this organization is so important and we need to nurture it and care for it. There's a great quote from Eleanor Roosevelt that I like. It was in the book. It says, "Better to light a candle than to curse in the dark." Better to light a candle than to curse in the dark. So when you see these problems with politics and it needs to be revitalized, you need to go to organizations that bring us together so that we can revitalize it. This is revitalization, right here. The stories, not just, it's MLAs, but it's also local politics. It's public interest people trying to make our lives better. That you work with the system to make it better. This is revitalization. This is why I had to be here. Had to be here. Plus, I love coming to Halifax. The other thing is, this is not a spectator sport, democracy. Like, you cannot turn the other way and say, oh, everything is going to be fine. Like, I think one of our biggest enemies is public apathy. So when I wrote that book, and I'm not forcing anybody to buy the book, but I'm sure Penguin would be happy. I promise you I'm not getting rich on this book. But the first title I wanted to call it was The Cost of Indifference. I didn't want to call it Unaccountable. The publisher said, no, you have to call it Unaccountable. You won't sell any books if you call it The Cost of Indifference. But to me, I worry about public apathy and the sight that, oh, the political people, they're all like certain senators that are in trial right now, or they're all corrupt, or they can't solve big problems. Then public apathy sets in. Then we're in trouble. So that's why you have to have Springtime Collective to say no. We have so much to be thankful for. So I think, Springtide helps us to be players in the spectator sport. It's not a spectator sport. The other point that Crick makes in his article is that democratic politics will not make every sad heart happy. He said that in 1962. We can't solve every problem. That's not politics. We can't make everybody happy. There will always be sad hearts. But he also said this is the great civilizing human activity. It is politics. It is how we come together on these really tough issues and we compromise. And I thought that was beautiful. So I think it helps us. I think we need these organizations. We need them more than ever right now because they tell us that as we face some of these bigger challenges, I'm going to talk about them very briefly, we need to be reminded that this is not going to be solved by Monday. Republicans are not going to fix their problems by Monday. And so it's going to take time. And we need to work with that. We can't become disengaged. So just an observation about the state of politics and policy in Ottawa. Because I had that experience. Again, as Mark said, I was a public servant for decades, worked in different places. I was actually the Prime Minister Harper's, in fact, is his assistant secretary for macroeconomic policy. So I would work like the Prime Minister's offices in the Langevin building. They were on the first and second floor. I was on the third floor. And so we briefed the Prime Minister every day on the economy. And I did that for 2 years before I became the Parliamentary Budget Officer. But I didn't like the way things were unfolding. I didn't like, I really was honored to be Parliamentary Budget Officer, but I didn't like when I was watching the politics. I was not a politician. I had a calculator. I provided numbers on issues, but I didn't like the way things were playing out in the city. I'll talk about that briefly. But I just have this sense right now, and this is not a partisan comment, but I think we are potentially on the cusp of positive change. Like, it's not there yet. You can't taste it, but you can see it. At least it's in the language of some of our political leaders. The Liberals are bringing it, I hope the Conservatives revitalize. I hope the NDP revitalize. I hope the Green Party grows. And I hope we don't lose something that we're starting to talk about right now. It was, for me, remarkable when Prime Minister Trudeau said, I'm bringing back cabinet government. Whoa, cabinet government. So, it's not just like the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister's office making all the decisions, but we're going to have huge respect for every cabinet minister and what they get to bring to the table. So it's really government by the executive, not just the Prime Minister. Little less authoritarian. I got to be careful because the last time I was in Halifax, it was for a fundraiser, and I said our Prime Minister was Putinesque. And I didn't realize it, but a cartoonist took that and said... And there was a cartoonist, and it had typical page, bald head, boring, looking in front of a computer. Secretary comes in with a newspaper saying, or not a newspaper, the telephone saying, it's Mr. Putin. He wants to talk to you. He says he doesn't like the comment. That's Nova Scotia, right? They're hard hitters in Nova Scotia. And the cartoonists are the best, obviously, in the world. The website is amazing. Now I can see the connection, and I can't even see what's going on. I'm sure I don't want to see. So finally, just like a few lessons learned from the PBO, the Parliamentary Budget Office job. I didn't want it. I said that, I didn't want the job. Nobody wanted it, honestly. I was the Prime Minister's Assistant Secretary at PCO, nice job. I knew, I felt comfortable, had a great, looked out the window, I could see the Peace Tower. I got to do the briefing, could pick up the phone, ask if we're working on a budget issue. I could phone any department. They said, well, how can we help the Prime Minister? Nobody wanted to be, now we're going to work for Parliament. We're going to give parliamentarians information they've never seen before, and we're going to see how that plays out. Nobody wanted that job. I swear to you, nobody. And I've said this before, I think I was the only person in the interview. And in the interview, I said I didn't want the job. And there's people that were there in the interview, like one of my former bosses, Don Drummond, who was a great economist, way better than me. And it was a strange interview. Like at half the interview, I'm saying I don't want the job. Then the other half of the interview, he's answering the questions from the... But it was, for me, it felt like we knew we had an experiment. It was just an experiment in the sense, like, what happens, like, what if we actually gave information, we were giving prime ministers and finance ministers, like, just not political information, but just, like, boring, you know, numbers. This is what this could cost. Wars, fighter planes, crime bills, changes to old age security. What if instead of, in the past, we would just give that to the finance minister and the prime minister, and they would decide that what actually would trickle out to members of parliament. What if we put together a team of people? So we gave them everything, like documents, like thick documents, and, with executive summaries and people's names on them, and they were peer reviewed. Like, how would that play out? What happens, would they be able to hold the executive to account? And what happens if we were like created an organization that the next generation, I was talking to some of them here before, like, the fellows that just graduated, they actually looked at this organization and say, whoa, that's like my generation organization. That's not like an old guy generation or old woman generation. This is like transparent. This is like they're putting work out, they're putting it on the website, they're talking to people, and on every big issue, they would try to be on every big issue. They didn't decide what the issues were, but they would provide information on these issues. And what happens if we try to build a culture within an organization that we weren't cynical? It's not our job to say, go to war, don't go to war, buy a fighter plane, don't buy a fighter plane, but we just provided the analysis. And we didn't opine on whether this was a good decision or not, but at least give them something that they could use, in a context of political accountability. Is this the right priority for the country? Is this the right policy direction? What kind of national defense system do we want? What kind of retirement system do we want? What kind of correctional system? That's not our job. That's a tough job. That's a political job. And like I said, I didn't want the job. With great humility, I needed to be totally 100% pushed to do the job. And it was people that I had worked with that I started phoning. I said, well, what do you think? Like, if I took this job, would you come? And, these people have names, like Mustafa Skeri, who I used to mark papers for him at university like 40 years ago. He was finishing his PhD while I was a student. And then Sahir Khan, who I'd hired to work, basically was a private sector guy in New York City that wanted to come to Ottawa to raise a family. He was tired of traveling. And just a terrific kind of, sense for costing and things like that. So they said, no, you got to do it. We can do it. And Mustafa was an Iranian. I remember when I was studying at Queens, like he had part of his family stuck in Iran. And he said, Kevin, I'd like to do something for my country if that's okay with you. That's what he said. I don't care if I get fired. And Sahir said, Like, I'm Indian. My dad came here. We just want to do something for our country. I'm a private sector guy. Anyway, I'll make money. I don't care. And for me, to be honest, like, I even then I wasn't convinced, but I had suffered this amazing, like, this loss in our family. I lost a son in an accident while I was doing that Privy Council office job. And, I was, like, really struggling. I didn't feel like I fit anymore in the public service. And our family was really hurting. I wasn't sure if I should take the job because our family was hurting so much, or I should take the job and maybe, like, I could help the family somehow by saying, we're not kneeling down here. Like, we're going to get back on our feet. And, I had two younger kids that lost a brother. So I think the lesson I learned from my son, Tyler, was, like, there's no security. Like, you just disappear like that anyway. So what are we fighting for? Like, why don't you go there and give it a try? Which I'm pretty sure everybody that's getting an award here, like, they're trying for something that they feel is really important. So, like, there were three lessons, that I often think about in terms of quotes. I love quotes. They just sort of stick in my head. And there's one from this British historian, Fuller, Thomas Fuller, who said, everything is difficult before it's easy. Like, you always know when you start something, it's going to get hard at the beginning. Like, in the interview, I was saying, I don't want the job. I don't want to build an office where nobody's going to pick up the phone. I get no information. I don't want to go in front of those committees. They're nasty. I'm not going to get used to that. And I don't want to write reports that everybody's going to read. Like, that's a hard thing to do. Like, you got to nuance every word. You got to see whether or not, like, can you actually do that? I didn't want to do that. But once we got started and this team came, thanks to Mustafa and Sahir, and they would, like, these people are really smart. Like, I'm not. These people, like, they know what they're doing, and everybody wants to work for these people. So they brought together this good team. Then you can start getting used to it. Like, wait a minute, I can go to committee. And so here was this type of person. He was like literally worked in Wall Street for the better part of 10 years. Like his line as we left the building is, man, Kevin, I could smell napalm. Like this is going to be a great meeting. I said, well, I have to answer all the questions. Like you're just sitting next to me. He said, oh, this is fantastic. He was quoting from Apocalypse Now. But there was no apocalypse. No apocalypse. Well, at least I didn't think there was. I don't know, maybe Prime Minister Harper thought there was some. You know, and then I love the quote from Einstein, in the middle of difficulty, you will find opportunity. So like it was almost a mindset for the office. So we would start, looking at every issue like secrecy. Like there was a complete, that the whole town was shut down, it seemed like under Prime Minister Harper. Information, like they knew if the parliament, when I asked for information, it was like news within the Privy Council office and the finance department, and they had to manage it, and we got nothing. And so we said like, oh, this is gonna be really cool. Like we'll just find a way to be like, their secret will be like the most transparent anybody's ever seen. Like everything we actually we'll put on the website. Even if we write a letter to a deputy minister saying we need information, he comes back and says, you can't have it, it's going on the website. Like we'll be so, everything we do, that you went for a trip, we're putting it on the website. Every paper had to go on the, and it's still there. We never took it off. So for us, like you got secrecy, we'll give you transparency. There's a Seinfeld program like that. George does it. George is like, he just finally admits in Seinfeld that, he was like, his life isn't really working, so he's just going to try the opposite. And it turned out like telling, really attractive woman that you live at home, you have no job, really was going to work. And it actually did work for George. And then like complexity is a tough issue. Like how do you cost a war? Like what's your behind your calculations for death and disability? Like, how do you cost an airplane? Like, what do you estimate for, like, acquisition cost, operation sustainment cost? What's the difference between that and a CF-18? Like, how do you cost a crime bill? A Truth in Sentencing Act, when you have more people that are, they lose this remand system. So then all of a sudden we're seeing, like, that's complexity. That's scary. But then you say, this is, like, an amazing opportunity. We're going to have to learn how to write. We have to have executive summaries that explain this stuff to people. Like, what's behind these numbers? And we can never pretend that we know the number. So this is like, even for economists, this is an opportunity to talk about putting numbers out, ranges of numbers, uncertainty. So we said, wow, complexity, that's actually, we could work with that. We'll fight it with good descriptions. Minority parliament, which is scary because every financial bill is a vote of confidence. A government could fall. In our very first year, Prime Minister Harper had to prorogue parliament so it didn't fall. And, that's the nature. So you got to be on your game in a minority parliament. You can't put out crap that somebody's going to use and say, well, I'm sorry, I got the number wrong. But the government just fell. Like, you can't do that. So it's like a minority parliament were even an advantage. We had a big recession in 2009, like a world financial crisis. All of a sudden, we started saying, this is great. The economy's collapsing. They need us. Like, everything kind of turned around saying, we'll find some way. They cut our budget. By a third, we're saying, this is awesome. They cut our budget. Now we get to go to committee and say, we're shutting down the office. Like, they don't want information. You don't want it. If I don't have any clients, we're out of here. I'll go do something else. We have a really strong team. They all have other jobs. And then we had like a budget 2012 when the government said, now that they had a majority, we could freeze spending for like 5 years and there's no impact. We could freeze spending in veterans. There's no impact. And we're saying, whoa. Show us how you do that. They say, we're not giving you that information. So your job is not to see how money's not spent. We're taking that money away. I said, no, we did stimulus analysis. We're going to do austerity analysis. No, you can't do that. So we're saying, okay, we'll see you in court. Because my mandate is in the Act of Parliament. That's the law of the land. We could even test them. Everything. So in the Einstein, in the middle of difficulty, you see opportunity. 100 years ago, Einstein thought maybe if we had two black holes, and they came close together, we have something called gravitational waves. That guy was smart. He wasn't even an economist. Just think of what kind of economist he could be. I would have hired him. Then there's this last quote, I'm getting to the end, I promise you. And George Bernard Shaw, there is no progress without change. Like these folks that are here today, that are getting these awards, all the nominees, They want change. They know they have, they're trying to fix stuff. You know, and we have to fix things. We need to revitalize politics. We have systems in Ottawa that don't work. We have documents that are gutted. There's no information in them. You know, even like the legislation for the Parliamentary Budget Office, it's not like a big deal, but you know what? We have a government now that says it wants to strengthen the office, make it an officer of parliament, give it better access to information, use this office to help cost opposition platforms. And they say they're going to do this over the next, you know, their mandate, the next 4 years. So maybe that's change, right? There's this opportunity of progress. So I like that, this other quote, and I'm done. I like that, you try, you fail. You try again, you fail better. You just keep going. You don't know whether there's going to be success, right? Not everybody's going to win. All the nominees are heroes here tonight. So let's work to support Springtime Collective. That's one of the reasons why I came here. Let's celebrate democratic politics in Nova Scotia. You know, otherwise you can have the Republican Party in the States, right? Let's thank all our nominees. The best times are ahead. If you revitalize politics, I think the chances of the best times ahead for the next generation are much better. Thank you very much.
That was Kevin Page speaking last March at the Springtide Better Politics Awards in Halifax. You can hear his full speech as well as lots of archive content from Springtide on the Springtide YouTube channel at youtube.com/springtideco. Thank you for listening to the Offscript podcast. We are back again next Tuesday with another special episode, and we're back with a new full episode of the regular podcast on January 10th. You can find shareable versions of any episode you hear on the podcast by visiting audioboom.com/offscript. Those versions share right in Facebook, where your friends can play them straight from their newsfeed. Until next week.